Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. We will beat 'em on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world is to come and tell you why. There's a better world is to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world is to come and don't you see?
Good evening and welcome to Progressive News Network's Environmental Show. Thanks so much for joining us. On behalf of myself, Rick Spezak, News Director, and my co-producer, Mickey Royce of the Media Goddess Worldwide, I want to thank you for joining us. I also want to thank our sponsors, Media Goddess Worldwide, and also Imagineering Productions, a full-service web media and SEO company. Tonight's show, we've got some amazing guests. We've got Steve Malagodi, internationally known human rights activist. We've got Gwen Holden Berry and Sherry Foynton, who are going to be talking to us about Gulf-related issues, Gulf recovery issues. We've got Rachel Kieski, who will be talking to us about Florida power plant issues and related issues on trees. And also we have Trish Sheldon, who will be on with us, talking about genetic modified foods. Wow, it has been some week, hasn't it? Before I go any further, I want to talk about two other stations briefly, two other shows that you should be listening to. Gwen Holden Berry has a show called Here Be Monsters. It's on just before us on Blog Talk Radio, Here Be Monsters from 6 to 7. You've got to make sure you check it out. Gwen has always got the best guests around, always bringing really, really intelligent, thoughtful, progressive people forward, letting you hear ideas and things you need to know about. So make sure you check out Gwen's show. That's 6 to 7 on Blog Talk Radio, Here Be Monsters. I also want to mention another friend's show, Amy Tidd, the Amy Tidd Show, which is Saturday mornings from 9 to 10. And that you can hear on 1300WMEL.com, 1300WMEL.com. That's 9 o'clock Saturday mornings. Always has some wonderful guests. Make sure you check it out. Tell her you heard about it here on Progressive News Network. Well, all you progressives out there know that Occupy Wall Street has been seriously absent from all commercial media until this week. Oh my God, like a rash all over the place. Even the Sunday chat shows had it. CNN's done some coverage. And so it's not just MSNBC and Democracy Now and Keith covering it. Now it's actually on the mainstream media. And, of course, they're taking their pot shots. And, of course, Fox thinks it's the most dangerous thing to happen to this country. They call them a mob. Now, they had no problem with the teabaggers waving guns. Four teabaggers together in a lump. Hey, suddenly it's newsworthy. But, of course, they're calling 3,000 peaceful protesters a mob on Wall Street. And, of course, as you probably all know, this is catching on across the country, San Francisco, L.A., Chicago, Washington, D.C. Of course, the 2011 event has been going on in D.C. this week. It's really wonderful things catching on. Also, a couple of the idiots have weighed in. Herman Cain says that these people are anti-American. Well, if by America you mean robber barons, yeah, Herm, you got that right. And the other thing that I thought was just absolutely hilarious, he says they're secretly coordinated with Obama. And then weighing in on the idiocy scale, I heard Dan Rather this morning say, well, the whole Occupy movement can be blamed on one blogger whose name is Grimm. Well, I'll tell you what, there's an awful lot of people across the country who'd never heard of Grimm, but I'll tell you what, there's an awful lot of people who have heard of Wall Street, who have seen from the foreclosures, have seen from the jobs being shipped overseas, have seen executive salaries go through the stratosphere and their jobs and their pay falling and falling and falling and their hours falling and the funding for their schools falling and the funding for roads falling. Yeah, there's one blogger who started the whole thing, and as Herman Cain says, they're definitely all covering Obama, that's for sure. I saw somebody on one of the other chat shows this morning say, oh no, I know who it is. It was Goot Gingrich. Goot had this to say. Now, of course, we know his judgment on human nature is really, really good. He says that the whole Occupy Wall Street movement is a result of poor education because they're just jealous. They're jealous of the rich. I'm sure that's what I saw in those signs, right? Okay. In the news, some wonderful events coming up. The 22nd and 23rd in Orlando is a statewide Awake the State event. There'll be training. There'll be information. You need to know what's going on there. So make sure you find out what's going on with Awake the State. Well, without any further ado, it's time to start part one of the Steve Malagodi interview. He's going to talk about his experience. He went up to Washington, D.C. to protest at the White House and was arrested. So here we go. This is Steve Malagodi. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Stephen Malagodi, a progressive activist, longtime activist in a variety of arenas. Stephen, welcome.
Thank you, Rick. History really is as a civil rights and human rights and anti-war activist. But the tar sands issue for me kind of brought all together. So just wanted to clarify that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, it's hard to have human rights if there's no environment left. And if they've managed to successfully poison the environment, civil rights becomes a moot point. So, yeah, I absolutely take your point with that. I just want to also reference the fact that I know you've worked for a long time with issues revolving Haiti as well. If you have a minute to talk about that, too, that'd be great. But we really want to focus today primarily on the tar sands protests that I know you attended up in D.C. Could you frame that for us, Stephen?
You mean the event in Washington itself?
Any way you'd like to talk about it.
Well, at the last 2 weeks in August, the 350.org organization and some other organizations and some other prominent writers and activists called for a demonstration outside the White House, an ongoing demonstration that would basically be a daily sit-in involving any number of folks who are willing to be arrested over the tar sands issue. I found out about it because I got an email from Naomi Klein, the wonderful author of Shock Doctrine, which is a must-read for everybody, I think. And so when Naomi Klein sent this email out about this issue and I started investigating, I realized that that this was something that was of vital importance. And you know, we get some new crisis, it seems like, every week that calls for our attention. But the more I looked into this, the more I realized that this was much bigger than that. It's going to be a long-term global issue, and as I said, I for me at least, it really brings together the issues of human rights and civil rights and the environment in a way that was particularly poignant to me. So at any rate, in the last 2 weeks of August, there were these series of daily arrests in front of the White House. During that two-week period, 1,253 people were arrested in an act of civil disobedience outside of the White House. I was arrestee number 94 on August 29th, and we got it went off very successfully for two straight weeks, with one day interrupted by Hurricane Irene, which followed me up to Washington from Florida. So other than that, it really was a tremendous success and brought a lot of international attention to the tar sands issue. The tar sands issue is fairly well known in Canada, but not very well known here in the United States. And it really wasn't until the Keystone pipeline project was proposed that it started to gain some awareness here in the States.
I noticed that there's been a really interesting array of people lining up in opposition to the tar sands, and I find it more than curious how the EPA and State Department have sort of waved away these concerns. I noticed that there are actually members of the DNC who signed on in opposition. Today there was an essay by Robert Redford, a wonderful lineup of people that was out there being opposing it in front of the White House. You know, could you talk a little bit about the what was actually going on there at the protest in front of the White House?
Well, yes, there have been a number of celebrities who have taken up this issue. Daryl Hannah was there a couple of days after I was arrested. She was just sort of hanging out in the park there in front of the White House, and there was a big commotion. And I have no idea who Daryl Hannah is, really, but apparently it's somebody to pay attention to. So, yeah, Daryl Hannah and Robert Redford and a number of other folks.
Bill McKibben, I know, was there.
Bill McKibben was there every day. Bill McKibben's presence was ubiquitous. He was there every day, and quite an amazing fellow, actually. I had the good fortune of being arrested on the day when a number of religious leaders were also arrested. I didn't plan it that way. It just was happenstance, and I found myself in the back of the police van with a really wonderful person, Reverend Paul Mayer, who was a colleague and a friend of the Berrigan brothers. So we had a great time talking about Philip and Daniel Berrigan and the level and nature of protest and dissent and opposition during the Vietnam War when I first got started and what's going on today.
Stephen, so, let me ask you, were you seated when you were arrested? Was there a blockade of any kind, or was it just the mere presence that instigated these arrests?
Well, I was charged with failure to obey a lawful order, and that's just kind of a legal technicality. What happens is that you can get a permit to demonstrate in front of the White House as long as you keep moving. But as soon as you stop moving, the police will revoke your permit because you're blocking the area, technically. And so that's you know, what the plan was that there was a permit to demonstrate in front of the White House. We just didn't move. So once that happens, they give you three warnings, and at the end of the third warning, they place you under arrest for failure to obey a lawful order to disperse. And you pay, it's a civil infraction. You pay a $100 fine, and it takes a few hours of being in police custody to pay the fee and waive your court appearance if that's what you want to do. And that's what most people did.
Yeah. Another question, Stephen, I like to ask is most of us, you know, we all start our lives, we attend school, we get trained in citizenship in some way, we learn from our parents, we learn from our peers what's normal, what's establishes us as a citizen. And many of us are very attentive to the news, we follow public affairs. But there's usually something that happens, something that transforms you from being just another citizen trying to make a living, trying to live in this society. But something happens to most progressives that takes them from this passive citizen consumer to an activist, a person who's prepared to take time out of their lives to try to improve things. What was it for you? What was your early experience that took you from being just another passive consumer citizen to someone who actually takes the time and the effort to make this a better world?
Well, I think it's different for everybody.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think people have different motivations. But, you know, if you're asking me...
For you.
Yeah, for me, what I can remember is the first political thing that I knew was wrong. That I reacted very viscerally to, and I'd be glad to tell you what that was if you want. Well, I was a very young person in growing up in the Boston area, in Somerville, actually. I was very young, I think eight or nine, maybe ten, and I loved watching what Dr. King was doing on the television. there wasn't much racial integration at the time, and Boston was a notoriously segregated, and I'll add racist city. So black people were not something that, you know, we had, that I had a lot of contact with. And so I loved watching Dr. King and listening to Dr. King, and I was just fascinated with the whole civil rights movement as it played itself out on television. And I was at my grandmother's house one afternoon, and was watching, the television was on, and the news came on that Dr. King had been assassinated. And my grandmother said, "It's about time somebody shot that nigger. He never did nothing but cause trouble." And I knew, I just knew that was wrong. I reacted very viscerally to it. I was outraged somehow. I don't know why. And I guess it was from that moment that I realized that, you know, some things are wrong. Some things seem to be very wrong, and other people don't see it that way. And so that was really the first time for me when, I mean, I had that awareness that things were not right in the world, and not everybody thought the way I did. And so, I mean, after that, I mean, after that, when I became a teenager, I mean, there was the Vietnam War, and of course the ongoing civil rights struggle, and you know, it went on from there. I was very involved in the anti-war movement, and much later did quite a bit of work in Haiti. Also, I was very active in the anti-apartheid movement, and because of my work in Haiti, my name kind of got around in the anti-apartheid circles somehow. And I was asked to volunteer to go to Southern Africa in support of the ANC, which I did in I went to Zimbabwe in 1989, and then through the same organization to South Africa in 1990, just after the unbanning, 3 weeks after the unbanning. So, I mean, that's just been my history.
Well, that's really wonderful to hear how make that transition, what awareness has come. And I know my own experience was similar. I had a great affinity for literature about Native Americans, and it seemed to me pretty obvious that there was a similarity between the racism against Indians that most Americans tend to perceive as the good guys winning the West. Didn't seem like winning to me at all. I was reading Wounded Knee and watching television and seeing the lunch counter sit-ins, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. That was my own transition from standard citizenship, consumerhood, to something that one had to participate and make this a better world, or one couldn't face oneself. That's part one of our interview with Steve Maligoti. I'm going to bring on our next two guests. Hello, I think we've got Gwen and Cherie. Welcome.
Thank you, this is Cherie.
Hi there, Rick.
Hi, welcome to you both. I'm so pleased you could join us. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having us.
Cherie, I understand you just attended some Gulf restoration events was it Alabama and Texas? Could you talk about those?
We did. We went to, I don't even know where to start. Like every few weeks it seems like there's been something that's been happening. So I guess basically for the Texas event, what actually happened was we went to the tar sands in Washington, D.C. and got arrested with everyone else standing up against that pipeline that's going to come through Port Arthur, Texas, which is far seen its share of environmental justice issues surrounding health with regards to the refineries in that area. And it was more like standing in solidarity with those communities that are going to be affected and have been affected by energy consumption. And so went out to California for a few days and spoke out there with some other environmental groups and some really great active people that are doing great things across the nation to help the people. And then we came back and we stopped at the tar sands hearings that they had there. And that, boy, they had bussed in a bunch of people from the unions, and they were screaming jobs, basically. So there was maybe, I want to say, you know, maybe 300 people that were there, 200 to 300 people that they had bussed in, and they were at the American Petroleum Institute was feeding them, and, you know. So it was very interesting to hear. We were outnumbered probably 7-1 as far as the people that were against it as opposed to the people that were for it. So, but, I mean, I was glad to be able to speak. I was honored to meet a lot of the people there that are going to be affected. And I understand completely that there's a need for jobs there. With, you know, the economy being the way it is, you know, as I explained to them, this is just not the project. This is not the case. It's not going to bring the jobs that you're hoping for. The industry's saying 20,000, and that's way overshot. Even the State Department said it won't bring a third of those and that they'll only be around for 3 years. So this is not the hope that you guys are looking for as far as the economy and jobs.
Unfortunately, it's something they've done year after year, time after time. They try to pit jobs against the environment, and that's not the equation. Tell us, as you know, as you said, there's so many important points. Tell us what we need to know right now. What's critical from your perspective?
As far as the Keystone Pipeline or as far as the Gulf of Mexico? Because there's a bit, they're the same.
Either and both.
Okay, so for the Keystone Pipeline on November 6th, I think everyone's going back to D.C. with hopes of surrounding the White House in a nonviolent protest and just continuing with the momentum that's already been started thanks to the wonderful people. We have the Energy Action Coalition, 350.org, PowerShift. There's over 200 organizations within the Gulf Coast that have been working on this issue. And I think just speaking loudly and consistently in that aspect. And then as far as the Gulf of Mexico, we still are dealing with a lot of issues surrounding the Gulf oil spill as far as health issues that we have not been able to bring to the light or to find any recompense for. The economically, the Feinberg issue, people not getting paid, that's always an issue, and we still have oil coming in. As far as I know, they're still spraying the toxic chlorhexidine out there in the waters off Alabama and Mississippi. So that's always an issue. There's honestly so much to it that it's ridiculous at this point, the fact that we've just kind of been left out high and dry as far as still have dead wildlife coming in, still having people sick, still having oil come in on a daily basis, even fresh oil. They found oil out there, what, maybe 2 weeks ago, and Transocean and BP are sitting there arguing back and forth about whose oil it is. I'm not sure if anybody's cleaning up, but I do know they're spraying that dispersant out there, and I know they're going to continue spraying because the Coast Guard said that's in their toolbox, and they're going to continue to do it. And this is a toxic chemical we know very little about, but what we do know is that 5 of its ingredients causes cancer and that we have a large amount of people that are sick right now on the ground.
Sheree, let me ask you another question, something that I think is important for our audience to hear. You're doing such wonderful work on so many fronts, and as you say, there's just so many things going on. It's enough for an army of activists. But let me ask you a personal question, if I may. So many of us, you know, most people would just like to live their life and have a safe place for their family, a safe place for their friends. You know, please don't bother me, please don't hurt me, don't poison my water, don't poison my air. But we all come to some point where that was the last straw. We have to get involved. What was it for you? What got you from just another citizen, just another consumer, to a person who absolutely has to act? What was your experience?
Well, I've always had a fondness for nature and an extreme fondness for the Gulf of Mexico. I moved here about 6 years ago with my husband, and a lot of what we do, the people of the Gulf, is dependent upon the Gulf in one way or another, whether it be the oil industry or fishing, or honestly just that's our playground. That's where we go, and we go crabbing and we stand on the beaches, and you know, they're not much, but they're ours, you know, we like to say. So I got invited with, I'm a journalist, and I was invited with the Louisiana Press Association to go out onto the Gulf, and I didn't really feel like I got the real connection with the people that I was looking for. So the next week I jumped on a boat and I went out into the middle of the water. And you know, you ever see those horror movies where you're doing something like the blob comes up and it slowly encompasses you. Well, right. I was with a fisherman out in the middle of the water, and the oil kind of came in around us like that. And if that wasn't frightening enough, we came up on a pelican that was in the water, and it was seizing. And we picked it up, and we were going to get it back to Fort Jackson to get it cleaned up. So we were going as fast as we can to try to get there, as fast as you can go through a ocean of oil to get back. But there was a point where we realized that he was dying. And so we idled down the boat, and the pelican was having seizures. And it was just me, the fisherman, and his 5-year-old son, who had been chit-chatting the whole time about how he was going to grow up to be a fisherman. And the pelican died between us. And it was a life-changing moment for me, simply because I had to really take a hard look at myself and say, you know, what have I wasted? What have I not seen here? How could I let this happen, that we could lose one of the most beautiful, pristine, and rare places on this earth, and cultures, you know, between the people, the Acadians, the Creoles, you know, the Native Americans here. You won't find the Vietnamese. You won't find this anywhere else in the world, this melting pot. And the fact that it was so fragile, that we could lose it so easily. So that was when I started working, you know, more kind of on the environmental side, and also on the economic side, because my husband is an offshore oil worker. Because where we live, there's really not that much. I have 6 kids, and that's what we do. You work in the oil field, you fish, or you work in tourism, and all three of those things were down. And so I started working with oil working families on trying to help them survive the moratorium, as well as their loss of ecosystem, because we also are sustained grocery wise out of the Gulf. And anyway, that kind of led into the environmental issue, which, by the way, you can be both. This is the problem. They want to always play the jobs against the environmentalists, but there is a way to have clean energy and to be safe in what we're doing down here anywhere, and still provide for people. And that's always been my point. Always bring those clean energy jobs here, because they're investing in those jobs, but they're investing in them overseas. So my point to the oil worker was, we have to be safe. We have to make sure those jobs are here for us. And we have to join with the environmentalists to make sure that we have something to leave for our kids. So that was the big changing factor. Well, not too long after that, I went to a meeting they were having about health issues, and I met this gentleman named Paul, and he was sitting up on the stage. This is on YouTube. You can go check it out. He's sitting up on the stage, and he's been having seizures since the spill, since he swam in the water. And I look over at him, and his seizures are exactly like the pelican that I witnessed passing. And as a matter of fact, the fisherman and the little boy, they don't even live here anymore. They moved away because the little boy came down with asthma he had never had before and lesions all over the back of his legs. Well, moving away, he got better.
Well, that's good to hear.
Then yesterday I came back from a trip to Oklahoma, and I get back here and I get this email from a friend of mine, and his name is John Bowenbaugh, and he's up in Michigan. He works on the Esperance spill, and it's a picture of a man having seizures in exactly the same way as Paul and as that pelican. And, man, I had walked to Washington, D.C. from New Orleans to raise awareness about the spill, and everywhere I went, there was something happening, whether it was uranium mining or mountaintop removal or toxic open-air toxic waste dumps. And between all these things I just mentioned, I realized that this is not a single issue. This is an issue that's happening across the nation and around the globe, where these corporations are putting their profit over our lives. And boy, I mean, it's been an evolution in my mind that we have got to work this into a human rights issue across the board and make clean air and water a human right. So wherever I get a chance to speak to that and to tell my story, that's what I've been trying to do. I cannot say it was just seeing the pelican, or it was just seeing Paul, or it's just seeing John's video.
Sure.
I have to say it's more, you know what it is? It's coming back from all these things and looking at my own kids and thinking, what am I going to leave them? You know?
That's right.
What's going to be left behind for them? What kind of life are they going to have? Are they going to work in an industry that it puts their profit over my kids' life, and they might come back broken? They might not come back at all. You know, are they going to be able to go and breathe clean air? Are they going to die in a cancer bed on a cancer bed sometime? Am I going to have to say an early goodbye? Are they going to have to say an early goodbye to me? Because the environment's not safe? No.
Well,
I can't let that happen, you know?
When I was a child, I lived up in the Pennsylvania area where the river caught fire because of the pollution in it. So,
wow.
I know what you're talking about. My family were early adopters, so we read the Rachel Carson book right as it came out. So we've been aware of these things for a long time. I don't want to leave Gwen completely ignored there. Gwen, could you talk just for a second about when?
You should be letting her testify. That lady is my hero. I copy her. She is doing the job. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Rick. Cherie is out there. She walked all the way from her home to Washington, D.C., and like she said, she found all of that going on, and she addresses it. I mean, with people like that to inspire and to keep it going and everything that's happening right now at this moment, hoo-ah.
Absolutely. Well, then let me go back to Cherie. Cherie, how can we help you? How can our audience... Who cares, who's concerned? What can we do to help you? What can we do to help the Gulf?
We have several events. Excuse me. We have several events that are coming up. One is we have a nonviolent direct action in Alabama. Let me grab it. What we're doing there basically is we're trying to share information about the possibility that the seafood's not safe. Now, we've seen just recently several reports come out that lead to that. We don't actually trust the FDA. We've actually seen genetic modification in the seafood right now. It's been a year and a half since the spill. We've been getting shrimp, pictures of shrimp with no eyes. I've seen fish with no eyes. And we know for a fact that some of these chemicals do alter genetics. Even from the NIH study, I've talked to some of the people there, and they've confirmed that genetic modification, even in humans, is possible. So we want to just make sure that the seafood's safe. We're also calling for Feinberg to do the right thing and make sure that people are getting compensated, and most importantly, that the people's health are being taken into consideration. So that's in Gulf Shores, Alabama. It's going to be during the Shrimp Festival. We had a little arguments going on back and forth about whether we were going to be allowed to do it, but we finally had a civil rights lawyer get involved, and he's standing up for our rights, that we do have a right to do this. It's going to be, we're going to start out at the Winn-Dixie on Route 59 at 16th Street, walk straight down to the public beach, and we'll have a rally down there. That's also being supported by Power Shift and Energy Action Coalition. Also, Occupy. We have Occupy New Orleans that's going on, and we are super stoked about that. Starting, I think it was October 6th, we had 500 people walk through the streets of New Orleans, right up to the parish, to the city hall there, and enter the city hall. We had 100 people that went in, and I wasn't able to go. I forgot. Well, I think I was in Oklahoma, but I do remember that they were talking about the prison system, because we have such social injustice here is so great, and the federal bank, and also the spill. So I think it's important wherever you're at that there's something in your area that you can do to alter, first of all, energy consumption in your area. Walk. You can get your food grown locally, but also to support these occupies. I completely support this whole idea that the corporate entities have taken over our rights as citizens, and even in most cases I can see our health and our well-being and the future of our children. So if you can get down to Duncan Plaza, they have a general assembly at 7 o'clock every day, and they're going to be there for as long as it takes in New Orleans. They also have one in Mobile that's Occupy Mobile is coming up, and on the 15th, Occupy Pensacola starts too. So wherever you're at, there's probably one coming to you.
There is one here too. Occupy Lake Worth turned into Occupy Palm Beach County. We had about 40-something people that signed up, Rick, and about 200 or a little more, a little less, showed up, and it was people from all around the area that saw more people coming to the Lake Worth one, so they showed up.
I actually got 10 calls myself from people who wanted to find out where the closest one was, and I sent them that way.
That's great.
Cherie, let me ask you a question. You know, there's been so much reluctance, it seems, on the part of the EPA and a part of the Coast Guard to actually recognize what's going on out in the Gulf waters. But I know there are some independent scientists, some independent doctors that are doing research on the impact of these on the Gulf folks and the Gulf foods. Two questions. Number one, what is the best source from your perspective on that information? And number two, when is that shrimp fest so we can try to get some information out for that as well?
Sure. It's October 15th from 12 to 4, which is a Saturday.
Okay.
And I think the Shrimp Fest actually runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but we will be there on that Saturday.
Okay, great.
We have a couple of really, really great doctors. We have a hard time getting doctors involved in this because they don't want to go into litigation. Now, for the EPA, I wish I could curse on the radio, but I can say they are the weeniest people I've ever met in my life. They don't stand up for anything. And you know why they don't stand up for anything? Because they have absolutely no teeth. They're made by a presidential resolution. They can be taken away at any time. If the next president, say Rick Perry himself, gets in there, then what do you think is going to happen to the EPA? I mean, they're gone. So they're scared. They're constantly scared that something's going to happen to them. I mean, hell, they lost 15% of their budget just this last year. That's with Obama in the White House. I mean, the chances are that the EPA is going to be around unless someone's really willing to fight for it is small. And they don't have the power to do anything, really, except come in and complain. Look, they came in and said, you know, stop the use of this Corexit and to lower it, and they did nothing. Who was in charge? BP was in charge. BP said, no, we're going to use it, and they did, you know. So I don't have any faith in the EPA to do anything except maybe issue some reports, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing with the FDA. I mean, the FDA is so bought out, it's insane. And most of the labs that we have, some of the universities, BP has given billions of dollars, and not just BP, other corporations, you know, they're constantly giving money to these groups. I have a friend, Mandy Joy, Samantha Joy from University of Georgia. I'm probably saying that wrong, but she said that when BP came in and offered them that option for, I'm talking millions of dollars, which she turned down because she's a righteous person. they said you couldn't use any of your own equipment. You couldn't use your past work. So she would have had to have started all over with a brand new lab. They put these puppet strings they tie to your shoulders if you're going to be a scientist that takes their money, and then the next thing you know, they're pulling all the strings for you.
Yeah.
I wish that people could understand, and it took me a while to wake up too, but I wish that people could understand the veins through our lives and through our government and through our every single thing that we do that these corporations have been able to reach. I mean, there's really nothing that they have no morals. Why would they? They're a corporation. They're not people. People, you know, people have a conscience. Corporations do not. The only thing corporations are meant to do is make money, and they'll go to every length that they can, even if it's murder, to do that. And I people sitting in their armchair at home with this false sense of I'm safe because either the government will take care of me and when I say take care of me, I don't mean I'm welfare, because the biggest, you know, people to get welfare are the corporations.
That's
I mean that somebody is going to be the hero and come in and protect you. Brother, the only hero that you have is in your bathroom mirror. I mean, we're at that stage. You better get up and look at that person, because that's the only person you can rely on.
She tells it.
We seem to have lost you there for a second.
Me? I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
The volume seems to have gotten real low. Okay. Gwen,
can you hear me a little bit. Rick?
Okay, yeah, I can hear you. Cherie faded out real bad.
You can hear me now?
Oh.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay.
Hey. The lady knows how to testify, Rick.
Hey, absolutely.
How to tell it. And I'm listening through the earphones to the program as I'm talking to you. I could hear her very clearly, so if that's any consolation.
Well, yeah, I just until just a second ago, I was hearing her really nice and clear. Cherie, is there a website we can maybe send some support your way? Are you do you have a not-for-profit or something we can send some money to maybe?
Actually, I don't, and there's a reason for that. That I work with a large group of people, and I don't want to be in competition. It seems like there's only so much funds out there for everyone. So if as long as I know that you're a good group, and I'll just do the best I can to support you. We do have Gulf Change, which is kind of our group, but really it's a conglomeration of citizens and groups across the Gulf. You can find that on Facebook. But also, I really clearly don't want to have any kind of ties to anyone because I want to be able to say what I want to right. say without having to worry about anything.
Well,
so,
I can certainly understand that, yeah.
Yeah, so you can check that out. And then also, we have, I'm trying to find it, it's like the Alabama protest. Someone was nice enough to make us a website, and I can't find it right this minute, but it's something like, you know, what's the name of the thing? Oh, I can't find it, but I'll find it here in a second. But we have a website for the festival itself, and it's like visit the Gulf, the Shrimp Fest or something like that. So people can look that up. If you go on me, if you go find me on Facebook or Twitter, I'll definitely
okay.
put that information out. And then it's the NVDA to show that the oil is still here, and so are we. And you know Occupy, it's everywhere. You can catch that, you know, all over the place. And like I said, I fully support that. Other organizations that are great organizations that are helping the Gulf in numerous ways. Like there's the River Keepers. There's, please, if you can help them, there's Louisiana
yeah.
Environmental Action Network. They're doing great work. There's Gulf Restoration Network is doing good work. It's the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. Please go help them if you can. Any of those people, those groups are doing great. Tejas, the Texas Environmental Justice Advocacy Services, they're doing great work. Oh, Gulf Coast Fund and Bridge the Gulf. Though if you give to any of those, then you are giving straight to the people of the Gulf of Mexico, and you're paying for testing, you're paying for advocacy, you're paying for you know, just real good stuff to happen, and like I said, it's going to go straight to the people that need it the most.
Well, thank you so much. I sure appreciate it. Listen, anytime you want to come back, you just give us a holler, okay?
Sure. Thank you again for having me. Anytime I can get the word out, I'm right there.
Okay, thanks, Cherie, and thank you so much, Gwen.
You're welcome, Rick. Thank you.
That's Gwen Holden-Berry of Here Be Monsters. Thanks so much, ladies. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'll have our next guest will be back in just a second. Want to bring you a couple other news items. The Palm Beach Post actually covered Occupy Lake Worth. There's a story in today's Palm Beach Post about it. Really pretty decent coverage. Also want to mention Progressive Voices is having an event in Melbourne. Saturday, November 5th, Alan Grayson will be speaking on what it means to be a progressive. Should be really interesting. We should be hearing from Trish in just a couple minutes. Pam Biondi, our Attorney General, has announced that they're seeking private attorneys for BP-related litigation. Yesterday, Biondi gave the U.S. Justice Department guidelines on what she wants for an audit of BP and the claim czar, Ken Feinberg. This is prompted by complaints from his handling of the $20 billion fund for victims of the oil spill. Biondi asked that the audit look at discrepancies in payments to similarly situated claimants. Couldn't be favoritism, could it? Documentation required by Feinberg's Gulf Coast Claims Facility? Whether Feinberg's delays in processing interim payments forced claimants to accept quick pay and the final settlement which required them to sign away their rights to sue? How different industries were being treated and the extent to which Feinberg relied on how close a claimant was to the oil spill to decide whether or how much the claimant deserved. And regarding Cherie's talk about that shrimp fest, there was a what they call pushback. Activists pointed to a report by the Waterkeepers Alliance, a coalition of volunteer organizations including Mobil's Baykeeper, that appeared to contradict the scientists' conclusions that Gulf seafood is safe to eat. Coalition members say that the protest will spread the word about ongoing dangers to the environment and seafood from the spill and the ongoing leaks. The coalition and the alliance may be well-meaning, said the industry people. The consequences of throwing out vague warnings about seafood based on limited research could be serious. Yes, and eating poisonous food could be serious too. Also want to mention once again the Awake the State Conference, the 22nd and 23rd. And November 5th, up in Melbourne, Alan Grayson speaking to benefit the Space Coast Progressive Alliance. If you haven't heard about them, they are a fantastic organization, a great coalition of progressives. Make sure you check it out. If you're anywhere in Central or Northern Florida, make sure you check it out. That's November 5th, Progressive Voices Melbourne, the 22nd and 23rd of October. In Orlando, the Awake the State Conference. Make sure you participate. I'm going to go ahead and bring up the Rachel Kieske interview. And if Trish comes on, we'll go back to live Trish. So here we go. This is Rachel Kieske, environmental activist.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Rachel Kieske, environmental activist. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be here.
We're real pleased to have you. I know you've been an environmental activist, a social justice activist for some time. Why don't you tell us what's going on with you right now and what we should know?
There are a couple issues that I think should be highlighted. There's a lot of environmental issues in Florida. A couple updates from a campaign that I was and am working on, the Scripps campaign, trying to save the Brigger Forest from deforestation and being turned into a biotech city. States that we have from that campaign are four out of the six activists that were arrested and charged with trespassing. Their charges have been dropped, and two await trial, or at least await their first appearance. So we're hopeful that their charges will be dropped as well.
Would you characterize that as attempts to intimidate?
Absolutely, and it's showing proof that the state doesn't have grounds to charge people and they're trying to silence us while we're trying to highlight an issue that that the state doesn't want to be highlighted. They don't want the issue of the Brigger Forest to be highlighted. They want to be able to profit off of the biotech industry, and this would be a real dent in the state's ability to do that if Scripps is unable to expand into the Brigger Forest.
You know, again and again we see the government giving big business cover that this is strictly for economic reasons. We have to accept pollution, we have to accept these kind of abuses strictly for economic reasons. Do you see that sort of thing?
It happens time and time again, and consistently the environment is always put second to profit, and that leads me into another huge issue that's happening. If folks will remember, a couple years back, the West County Energy Center was approved. It's now one of the largest fossil fuel power plants in the United States. Over 3,000 megawatts of fossil fuel going into the atmosphere per year, every year. And that's in Loxahatchee. Now, Florida Power and Light, which owns West County Energy Center, has proposed a new power plant in Hendry County called the Hendry County Clean Energy Center. Now, it's called the Clean Energy Center, but it is going to be, if it is approved, the largest fossil fuel power plant in the United States, going at 3,750 megawatts of natural gas and then a little bit of solar power. So if this is approved and it's in primary panther habitat, Florida will have the three largest fossil fuel power plants in the United States.
Isn't it so odd that somehow FPL, which invests in wind power and solar power other places in the United States, does not invest in solar power in this, what's called the Sunshine State?
It is very odd and very disconcerting, and it's destroying our last remaining native habitats in the process. There's less than 100 Florida panthers left, and they want to start polluting and digging out water from Big Cypress area. It's going to be incredibly devastating to the last remaining panthers that we have and all the other animals that are in that habitat.
Hopefully there will be more people alerted. I think we can safely say that more and more people are aware of just how compromised our environment has become. Let's hope that the work of you and many others will increasingly help them be aware of the compromises that have been done in We the People's name.
Absolutely. If people want more information about that particular project, they can contact the South Florida Wildlands Association. I'm personally a part of Everglades Earth First and the Palm Beach County Environmental Coalition, and we will also be working on those issues and raising awareness about those issues and other issues that are going on around Florida.
What other issues are on your close radar right now?
We have a variety of things that we're doing research into. We're going to be hosting the Farm Workers Association of South Florida. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, but they created a Lake Apopka Farm Worker Memorial Quilt to honor and remember the farm workers that have been exposed to ridiculous amounts of pesticides from the 1940s to the 1990s in that area. And now Lake Apopka is one of the most polluted lakes in Florida because of the pesticide use.
No, I hadn't heard of that. Is that quilt being, is it touring, or is there an event where that's going to be shown?
Yes, the quilt is on tour right now, and in the second Monday of September at the Quaker Meeting House in Lake Worth, it will be on display at 7 p.m. We're going to have a discussion about it so people can get updated about farm workers' issues in that area, and also people can see the quilt.
Is that the second Monday in November?
I'm sorry, December.
December, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. If people want to hear more about the farm worker issue, can you recommend a website?
I believe they can just go to the Farm Workers Association of South Florida. Right now, for me personally, I've been focusing on a lot of direct action with climbing. So it's been direct action climbing with Montana against the Keystone XL pipeline and tar sands issues, and also using climbing out in Oregon. Not sure if you're familiar with the forest issues that are going on in Oregon, but Cascadia Forest Defenders and NEST help save state and national forests in Oregon from being further deforested.
I've heard some terrible stories about the logging out there, where essentially there's been clear-cut logging up to roadways, and there's a thin veil of trees that are left near roadways, but just beyond that, it's clear-cut.
Oh, absolutely.
It's such a shame. You know, when it's so ironic. I mean, you know, I remember there was an old pejorative phrase that was used to oppose environmentalists, and we were called tree huggers. And you know, it just doesn't seem to be sensible for people to forget that without the green plants, there would be insufficient oxygen on the planet. And, you know, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised when I hear so many people who reject science, reject the scientific method, are in favor of believing in supernatural forces, when simple common sense and science says you have to protect the environment. If you don't have clean air, if you don't have clean water, what kind of life can you have? What kind of insight can you give us for people who need to know? How do you speak to people who are, should we say, environmentally tone deaf?
Most people are interested in the environment. They just don't know how to regulate the amount of natural resources that we process. And I think that's a lot where the debate lies, is when is it beyond the amount of sustainable? And that's one of the issues specifically in Oregon. Oregon Department of Forestry always thinks that the amount that they can clear cut, they consider a tree something that they can harvest just like any other crop in agriculture. There's a new proposal to increase the amount of cutting that they can do.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be approved in November or December. But they're always thinking that they can increase because due to the amount that they've planted. Where in reality, if you're cutting trees that are 200 plus years old, even if you plant them, you're planting three or four times the amount that you're harvesting. The quality of the forest itself and what habitat is there is not even comparable. You're destroying not just the trees, but you're destroying the whole habitat and the ecosystems that are there. New ecosystems are created out of these clear cuts. People are too separated. They think the forest is something else. It's not a part of them. They live in their house. Like getting people out, going hiking, seeing the ecosystem that they're really a part of, just only one wall separated. Those are ways that break down the barriers.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. Any final message you want to give to our audience? Some place they should pay attention to? Some issue coming up? I know.
I would just suggest people visit for the local issues if they're focused on West Palm, the Palm Beach County area, because I know you're up north, but for Palm Beach County, you can go to PBCEC, P as in Peter, B as in boy, C as in cat, ec.blogspot.com.
P as in Paul, B as in boy, C as in cat, E as in every, C as in cat.blogspot.com. Thanks again, Rach.
And if they want to learn more about the Scripps campaign, which I'm directly a part of, they can go to scripps.info. Also, Everglades Earth First goes across all of South Florida and even North Florida in a variety of environmental issues. So you can visit EvergladesEarthFirst.org for more information on what we're doing there.
Is there anything else you want to leave our audience with?
Yes, Rick. I actually want to depart with some very sad news. For those who are familiar with Ellen Peterson, she is sadly on her deathbed, bedridden and not taking food. For those not familiar with Ellen Peterson, she is one of the matriarchs of the southwest of Florida in regards to environmental protection. Ellen has dedicated over four decades of her life to preserving the areas in the southwest of Florida and is one of the key reasons why Fish Eating Creek, an incredible place that if people haven't been to, is so beautiful, filled with cypress knees and a riverine swamp. She's one of the key reasons why it's open to the public. In 1999, a part of Save Our Creeks and other groups got it open to the public and taken from the Likes brothers because it is a navigable waterway of the state. Absolutely incredible powerhouse, and I just want to really send out my love to her and hope that people can send out their love to her as well and honor her lifelong dedication to saving the wild places in Florida.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for that remembrance. So those of you who care about our environment, might be a good time to donate something in her name. Thanks so much, Rachel. Come back anytime, okay?
Thank you, Rick.
Well, friends, I want to thank you for joining us here, Progressive News Network. On behalf of my co-producer, Mickey Royce, I'm Richard Spisak, News Director, Progressive News Network. I want to remind you to tune in to our friends, Gwen Holden Berry, Here Be Monsters, Amy Tidd, Saturday Mornings. Make sure you tell them that you heard it here. We want to thank you for joining us. Next week, we're doing a media show. So we'll be inviting media activists from across the state to talk about the pros and cons, the good and the bad, the things that are being covered, the things that are being ignored. But they won't be ignored here, because there's a better world coming. And Progressive News Network brings you the activists who are doing the work, building a better world. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week. There's a better world a-coming.
We don't beat them on the land, in the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world that's coming, I'll tell you why.
See you next week.
Better world that's coming, don't you see? Better world that's coming, don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be